us. Right now, though, it's time to slip into talking about Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack. You'll find them on the web at tqag.com. And right here on a Tuesday morning, good morning, Tim and Greg.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, good morning.
Well, we're doing fine up here. Can't complain, you know?
Good.
Well, you have your choice. I have two fabulous things to talk about today. you have to tell me which one you want to hear about.
All right, one's
a cautionary tale.
One is a cautionary tale, and the other one is about Beanie Babies.
Well, this is a cautionary tale.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, a friend of ours who moved down here from New York about 5 years ago passed away a month ago, and his sister lives in California, and she knew who we were and what we did, and that we were friends of her brother when we lived in New York, along with a mutual friend of ours who also lives down here, who grew up with him. And after he passed away, because of the COVID pandemic, she did not want to travel here for obvious reasons and deal with the condo and the contents. So she contacted us. So the first thing I recommended, of course, the first thing I asked is, did he have a will? Unfortunately, he didn't. So what I had suggested to her was, the very first thing you do is to contact the association and have them change the locks immediately and contact an attorney, which seems pretty logical. So the reason she contacted us is because she wanted us to go in and look for their mother's jewelry, which she had sent him to sell if he ever needed money. And then if he ever sold it, then they would just split the proceeds, which is a very generous thing to do. So she wasn't sure if the jewelry was ever sold because she never received any proceeds checks, so she assumed that he didn't need the money. So when she told us this, the first thing I said to her was, well, we can't go into the apartment with if you're not the executor and there isn't a will, then that means that we're basically trespassing, and we can't do that because that's illegal and unethical for us to do that. So unfortunately, since there was no will designating her as the executor, I told her that we couldn't do anything until she spoke to the attorney. So she finally spoke to an attorney and got things so that she was going to be, I don't know how they do this without a will, but made her the executor. So that's why we're not lawyers. So anyway, she explained, we had agreed that we would go there and take a look at the things and photograph things and send her photographs to figure out what she wanted to do with them. And that we would, as we always do when we look through an apartment, is to look for the jewelry for her.
Or look for anything else valuable.
Any valuable, like credit cards and stuff, to make sure that those are not taken care or not stolen or anything. So she did not have the locks changed. And it turns out that his next door neighbor of 5 years, off and on, helped him do things in the apartment. And
had a key.
So after he passed away and all of this transpired, we had arranged to go down to take a look at things. That's when we found out that the neighbor had been going in and out of the apartment and had been sending photographs to someone in New York to find out of what was value in there. So he obviously felt he was he had a right to do it because he had helped him over the years. He felt entitled. But we have no idea whether the jewelry was ever sold or not, because she never heard that it was and never received her share of the proceeds. But we don't know whether he sold it and didn't send her the proceeds, but there's no way to tell because the entire scene was completely compromised. So the moral of the story, people, is make sure that you have a will and make sure
you have some inventory that you, of stuff.
Yes, that you have an inventory of the items that are of significant value or you think are of significant value, and keep it stored safely, either in a bank box or with an attorney. So it's kind of a sad tale that this happened, but our hands are tied, and we just said we're sorry. We can't accept this assignment because we can't do anything about this.
It shouldn't be up to you to deliver the bad news that the brother sold all the jewelry.
Well, exactly.
Right, yeah.
But we don't know whether he did or not, even
to have the sister say, I don't know if it's there or not. And then if somebody goes in there and if they do find it, they're like, well, she didn't know if it was here or not anyway. So, I mean, how can you, she has no idea whether it was there. So, you know, people just get sticky fingers sometimes. And it was just a crazy situation.
Well, wait a second here. We're not saying he did. We're not saying that he didn't.
Right. No, but just saying that the possibility exists. The greater possibility, yes. Because there was no control over the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why a will is so important, because now it's going to be put in probate and whatever happens. I don't know what all the legal jargon is and how that all works, but hopefully they'll be able to figure out some way that the whatever proceeds are coming out of it will go to his sister. But I don't know how that. I'm not a lawyer.
Right. But also outside of the will, you are an appraiser, and that you can speak to. So as an appraiser, it's really important, because in addition to the jewelry, it was also said, the family folklore is that there was this amazing marble statue sculpture that was there, that was from, you know, their grandparents and tour through Europe and God, blah, 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 whatever it was. But it's if that was there, then that should have been either inventoried as part of, here are the things that we have and here's what you need to look out for, and then have it updated and have it appraised to see where the current market value is and, you know, where things are. And that's what's important, is that the family folklore is that this was valuable. Well, it could have been, you know, 30 years ago, but maybe now it's not as in fashion, or, you know, the value may have changed, or whatever it is, it may not be the same. And this is why it's so important to have updates of things that you feel might have value, or that you know have value, is have them appraised, have them looked at, so that there is a document, so that there is a provenance trail of here's was, here's when it was, here's when it was looked at, here's when it was last valued, so that everybody knows. That's the important
thing. Even if you don't write it down, take photographs.
Right. Now, I have a question. I have a question here for Tim. Tim.
Yes, sir.
Joe wants me to pass along this question. How do you think the Marathon Online Sotheby's auction went in reality?
Well, in reality, I think so what Jill is talking about is that Sotheby's it was four different locations, and it was primarily online, and it was a marathon because there's a lot of time lag between the online bidders, the phone bidders, and absentee bids. Now, the absentee bids go pretty quickly, but then if people are on the phone or online, it's a whole new of selling. Now, I will tell you that when I started doing this at Julian's and they had incorporated the internet bidding with a video component, so it was a simulcast and it was going live, when we started, we were doing anywhere between 40, maybe 30 and 40 lots an hour, which that is slow when typically I can do 100 lots an hour when things are really moving along. What Julian did, and that was they were always marathon sales, and I think that's what Christie's and Sotheby's are coming up against, is that they're realizing there's people now that are willing to buy art online and pay a lot of money. So when you're, you know, when you're dealing with a $50 item, you move it along. But when you're dealing with a $50 million item, you take your time and you give them opportunity. And I think this is part of the growing pains of the online auctions and what's going on. I think that overall, it'll get better. And I think that people will continue to do this. And I think both Christie's and Sotheby's did quite well with several hundred million dollars in sales at each house. So that to them, I think, you know, the results are good. And there were several records that were achieved for different artists because of it. So I know that it's taken a long time. And yeah, they're used to, okay, we're going to do a sale and it's 2 hours long. Well, you know, when it goes to 4 and 6 hours and 10 hours, it takes a little longer. But when you're making that kind of money, yeah, okay, you'll just have to stick around. And people will. And even at Julian's, it will slow down if there's a lot of bidding.
Well, it was fun to watch because you were watching it. It was taking place in multiple places around the world. And of course, you have to stop and think about the time differences as well. So it was actually kind of thrilling to watch. I mean, it was certainly a novel thing to see. It's the first time I think anyone's ever seen that happen. So there is that part of it. It might not be as exciting as an on location, in-house auction, but it certainly was exciting to watch the people bid from around the world and how they dealt with it. Well, I enjoyed watching.
What goes along with that is, now that Jill pointed out that there was a Francis Bacon, do you think that would have sold more if people were in the room, or did it do okay just in this type of auction?
Well, I think that for the item that it is, I think that it did well because it was one of the highlights that they were promoting prior to the sale. You also have to remember is that just like, and I do this with all of my fundraising clients too, is to say whenever you have something that you're putting into an auction, is that you're pre-selling, you're getting it out there, you're putting it in front of people, and you don't know where they're going to ultimately end up. But there's a lot that goes into the marketing and the promotion of the items, but there's also hands-on calling people directly and saying, hey, look at this, and making sure that they have all the photographs, that they have all the information. So I think that that what this proved is that, okay, online can work, but I will assure you there was a lot of work behind the scenes to make sure that sale, just like in a live sale, that these pieces that were going up, that they were going to do well, that it was they did a lot of telephone work and emails and photographs and making sure that everyone felt comfortable bidding on those items.
Did they do any like COVID-friendly viewings beforehand for people?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So what they did is they set up private viewings, timed viewings for anyone that wanted to come in and take a look at them. And that's a coordinated effort, especially because these works were in sale rooms around the world. So I thought that was novel and that was great. And the other thing, I had a client ask me, well, oh, they because they talked about the, oh, people are getting better with bidding online, and is this great? Well, it's just like whenever it's the first of anything or the last of anything. Right now, people are feeling more comfortable, and it's just like when eBay started. You know, there was a rush, and people were online, and they were buying. Were things really worth that? Well, you know, people were there were competitive bidding, and that was great. And then it kind of leveled off a little bit. And I think we're seeing that in the art world now, is that it's this novel thing. The big houses are getting involved. It's a lot of information, where a lot of the smaller houses have been doing this. I think you're going to see more people being comfortable jumping in, doing it. And is it a reflection of the value, or is it more of hype? And that's the big question. And I think it could be a little bit of both. And people are just, it's a novelty. People are wanting to do it. And I was talking to a client yesterday who's considering selling in Hong Kong. And I said, look, it's going to be virtual. You should jump in. It's a night sale. You should do it, because I don't know where it's going to be next year at this time, because that's a whole different thing.
Right. You know, if you stop and think about the technology behind being able to link the world together like that, and how it, even though there were some bumps along the way, it seemed pretty seamless, and it seemed like, oh, this is the way we've been doing it for forever. And I have to say, I was very impressed. Very impressed with the look of it, the feel of the room that you were watching. You know, you were watching it live. And in case you're wondering what that noise is, Tim's in the bathtub with his rubber duck.
That's Sienna. That's playing with her toys.
But I was really excited about it. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, you don't want them to fail, but it's just human nature to think, oh, this is going to be a giant bomb. And it wasn't. It really wasn't.
No, it was very produced, too. And I think that makes a big difference, is that, and I think that the regional houses were probably watching it as well and taking note and saying that they need to, you know, really look at their production quality of the way that they do this, and how they do it, especially if it's a larger sale, because that's the way that you make it, like the night sales, or make it an event. And it's all about the production. And I think that they did a good job.
All right.
You know, where else could you buy a $30 million painting in your underwear? I mean,
well,
it was great.
All right.
And our last thing is that Greg got a phone call from an appraiser colleague of ours who has no idea about collectibles, and asked Greg if the Beanie Baby that she found is really worth $125,000. And Greg nearly choked on his tongue, told her about comparables, and the woman quickly said, "What, Greg, to you?" She didn't need
she
to be
said
educated.
To me, I appreciate you lecturing me on
there
that.
You go.
Of an item, but I have been, you know, I've been doing this for many years. Thank you.
And
anyway.
I know how to look up. I know how to look up comparable sales. Well, if you know how to look up comparable sales, the item that she was talking about, Greg went onto eBay, and it was like this Beanie Baby was $3 and $5, not $125. Don't listen to those crazy things on the internet that says they're worth millions. It's crazy.
All right. And speaking about crazy, we'll be back with more COVID crazy report next week.
Fabulous.
Have a great week.
Take care, guys.
Bye,
Have
Jill.
A great week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Jill.
Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise, this here on Robinhood Radio.